Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Rooster Crows Podcast. My name is Tyler Campbell, and today we'll be hearing a live sermon by Reverend Stephen Milton, recorded from the Lawrence Park Church Sanctuary on a Sunday morning. Today's sermon is titled, Getting It Wrong.
Do you have any food restrictions? Things you just can't eat? Or you won't eat? Yeah, I'm seeing people nodding. This is a time where it's getting harder and harder to be a waiter. Go into a restaurant and all sorts of people have to explain to the waiter what they will and won't eat. And some people have food restrictions by choice, of course. You know, vegans won't eat anything that's got to do with animals, so no meat, no fish, no dairy, no eggs. Some vegans also draw the line at honey. They'll say, nope, there were bees involved. I'm not going to have honey either. That's a choice. Vegetarians are a little more relaxed. Eggs and dairy and honey are okay, but no fish and meat, no flesh. And then there's people who have food restrictions which they haven't chosen, such as nut allergies or lactose intolerance, where they have to ask the waiter, is there any dairy in any of this? And some people also will say, I can't have anything that has wheat in it, no gluten, because they're celiac and they have terrible, terrible reactions if they eat something which has wheat in it. So we're living in a time where it's harder to be a waiter because waiters have to know what all these terms are and what they mean for what the kitchen is doing. And those are individual food restrictions by choice as well as by nature. But there are also food restrictions which apply to entire groups. Muslims and Jews won't eat pork. There's lots of instructions in the Hebrew Scriptures about what kinds of foods Jews are not allowed to eat, and it seems to have been a way not so much to keep them healthy as to give them a separate identity from the people around them. In the New Testament, in Paul's letters, he says that those restrictions do not apply to Christians. Christians don't have to worry about what Jews eat. They can eat anything they want. And as Christians, I think we tend to walk around thinking, okay, so we can eat anything we like. But every once in a while, you bump into a situation where you go, oh, actually, I do have some preferences about what I like. For instance, if you travel in some parts of the world, it's okay to eat bugs, ants, locusts, excellent sources of protein. But most people would say, no, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, if you find a bug in your salad, you're going to call the waiter over and say, take this back, right? There's no way you're going to eat that. And one of the churches, the church that I came up through out in the West End, they do a soup kitchen, not a soap kitchen, but a soup kitchen every Sunday. And one day we were flipping through some of the old cookbooks that they had on hand, and we came across a cookbook which had been published in the 1930s. It had recipes for squirrel, raccoon, and possum. And I may be a Christian urban snob, but as soon as I saw it, I went, no way, I'm not eating a squirrel. You might as well put a rat on my plate. I'm just not going to eat that, right? We have food taboos or something that you don't just think. Your first reaction is have a more visceral, emotional reaction. I'm not going to eat a squirrel. I'm not eating roadkill. Forget it, right? So I mention all this so that we can understand what Peter was going through when he had that vision of that sheet of animals coming down from the sky, because it was filled with animals that no good Jew would eat. However, many of those animals were things which Romans would eat, pagan Romans would eat. And the angel was saying to Peter, eat this stuff. And Peter's saying, I can't do that, I'm a good Jew. The angel has introduced food because what the angel really wants Peter to do is to go spread the news about Jesus to some pagan Romans, one particular household that the angel has also visited. And if that's going to work, it's going to take some time, and Peter's going to have to stay for a few days, and they're going to have to eat. And they're going to have to eat what the Romans eat. And a good Jew is going to say, I can't touch that stuff. It's being dedicated to gods, and there's pork here, and there's all sorts of stuff here I cannot touch. But the angel's saying, get over it. I want the faith to spread. I want you to take the good news to this pagan household. And so it starts with this vision of food coming down from the heavens, because for this faith to grow, it's going to have to break out of its Jewish shell. Peter probably thought that Christianity was going to spread by just taking it from synagogue to synagogue to synagogue. At that time, Jews made up about 10% of the Roman Empire. So if they could even get, you know, a small portion of the Jews to become Christians, it wasn't going to go anywhere. The Christianity just wasn't going to spread. So God made a decision and said, I want this good news to be shared with Gentiles. But my Jewish followers, the very first guys, they're going to have to get over their food restrictions so that they can dine with the Gentiles and spread the good news over dinner, over lunch, over breakfast, because that's how people get together. And it was a good decision, right? Christianity did start to spread, started spreading all around the Mediterranean, following the trade routes, and that, you know, the whole adventure of that is told in the book of Acts with Peter and Paul going all over the place, particularly Paul going to all sorts of pagan towns and hanging out with pagans and telling them about Jesus Christ, and it starts to take root. Spin forward 2,000 years, and Christianity is the biggest religion in the world. 2 billion people are Christians. So it worked. But we know that it's, at least in North America and Europe, it's in trouble. If you've seen the latest issue of Broadview magazine, you'll note that there's an article in there that talks about what's likely to happen to the United Church in the future. And what it talks about is that the United Church has been growing, growing, growing until about the 1980s. That was its peak in terms of weekly attendance. And ever since then, it's been on a steady decline. And churches, of course, are worried about this. They don't want this to happen. So they've been trying to figure out, what can we do to turn this around? But when I was a student, I did a placement with the department of the National Office of the United Church of Canada, which at that time was called Edge Ministries. And it was their job to figure out the new things the church could do to grow. And one of the things they showed me and taught me was that most churches would only reach out for help once their congregation had shrunk to about 20 or 30 people on a Sunday morning. By that point, their money was running low, their people were running low, they wanted to save their church, but once you get to 20 or 30 people, Edge told me, it's too late. They don't have the energy to do what's necessary, not enough people to sit on new committees, and they usually just want to keep their service exactly the way it is because they like it, but invite new people. And that is not something which attracts new people. So most of the time when churches get around to asking for help, it's too late. And as a result, churches are just closing every single week across this country, which is not exactly great news on the year of our 100th anniversary. This church, fortunately, recognized the problem before it got down to 20 or 30 people. About 10 years ago or so, this church recognized that attendance was going down, and it was, and the money in the bank was also going down. The endowment fund, our rainy day fund, was shrinking each year because of deficits. So the church knew that it needed to do something new, and my predecessor as lead minister, John Suk, made a suggestion. He said, we know from studies that fewer and fewer people want to come to church on Sunday. We can reason that since most of the people who come to church on Sunday are older people, and older people are destined to leave this world, what we need are younger people. So we need younger people to come to church, but more and more younger people are saying not just that they're religiously unaffiliated, but that they don't even believe in God or don't have the kind of spirituality that would bring them to church on a Sunday morning. Basically, the one thing we could be certain of is most young people didn't want to come to church on Sunday morning. So John said, let's do something that isn't on Sunday morning. Let's create a service which doesn't happen on Sunday mornings and is not particularly religious. Because what we want to do is attract new people into Lawrence Park Community Church, even if they don't show up on Sunday mornings. So he suggested, let's do a service which happens either in the afternoon or in a weeknight, or eventually we decided a Sunday night, and it won't be very religious. It'll have, say, inspirational speakers, and it'll be designed so that it can attract young people, young adults. This was going to be expensive, so we would need some grants. So grants were applied for. And John decided to take a page out of, and he worked with a committee on this, John decided to take a page out of the book of Acts. And he said, the way to make this work is to have every service begin with a meal, a free meal, because that's what brings people together. People, complete strangers, sitting around a table, talking to each other, getting to know each other. It's worked since the early days of the Jesus movement. Let's do it again, but let's take most of the religion out of it, because we're becoming a more secular society. A name needed to be given to this, and so it was called Soul Table. So half of the name implied getting together to eat, Soul Table. And I know a number of you know this story already, but I have a reason for retelling it. So I was hired in 2019 to be the minister who would run Soul Table. Judy Pressman was hired as the program manager. And we got a band that came in every week. And so we started it up weekly in 2019. And we had special speakers who would come in, inspirational speakers, people who spoke about social justice and other topics. Religion wasn't usually one of them. And it actually worked. I mean, we advertised on social media. We had posters over at Glendon. And we found that on average, we would have about between 30 people to 90 people on any given Sunday night. The average is around 45. Every single Sunday that we did that, the majority of the people who came were not from this congregation. So that was good news. We were bringing genuinely new people into the church. It was expensive. It was not paying its bills. And had it continued, it would have burned through our endowment in a couple of years. But that was a risk that this church had decided it was willing to take. Unfortunately, Soul Table was brought to a sudden end by the pandemic. We tried to put it on Zoom, but we found that the Soul Table events that we put on Zoom on Sunday nights, exactly the same time of day, none of the new people came. They had taken our word that we were going to offer an in-person experience with free food. And once the food was gone and the in-person experience was gone, they were gone. So we entered the pandemic, Soul Table ended, and the reason I'm retelling this story is I just want to make a point that pretty much everything that we thought going into the Soul Table experience, we were wrong about. Pretty much everything turned out differently than we expected. We'd hoped that young people would come to Soul Table. They didn't. I know the one person who came to Soul Table regularly who was a Glendon student, and he's now a member of this church. No other young people were coming. We were just dead wrong about that. What we were doing did not attract young people at all. It tended to attract people who were 55 and older. They wanted to come, and a lot of them were ex-church people, but no young people came. So we're just dead wrong about that. We assumed that the reason that we needed Soul Table was because our finances were going to run out and we were going to run out of people coming on Sunday mornings. But the truth is, during the pandemic, we received a couple of major bequests from families who used to go here a long time ago, who managed to more than double our endowment fund. So we had been afraid that our finances were just going to go straight down, and instead they more than doubled. We did not see that coming. So we didn't see the pandemic coming, we didn't see the new money coming, and we didn't see that we wouldn't be able to attract young people at Soul Table. Here's another thing which we didn't expect. During the pandemic, a couple of the choir members approached me, or rather just before the pandemic began, a couple of the choir members, younger choir members, approached me and they said, hey, it'd be nice if us younger people had a chance to just get together and talk about stuff which is just of interest to younger people, dating and that kind of thing. So during the pandemic, I got in touch with them and I said, do you still want to do that? And they said, yes. And so we did. So we started meeting on Zoom, and it was just the 20s and 30s people. And it worked. It grew. And some days we would have, like, you know, 10 or 11 people online, all young adults, talking about stuff which was of concern to young adults. And there was always something spiritual to make its way in there, but it wasn't, like, the point of the gathering. And as the pandemic ended, I realized, like, well, I don't want to lose this, because we brought in some young people who didn't even go to the church before. I didn't want to lose this, so I proposed to council that we hire a young adults minister on a part-time basis, temporary, just to see if we could keep this thing going. That's how we got Roberta. And the assumption was, young people don't like church, they don't come on Sunday mornings, they don't really like religion, so we should just do something which is kind of secular and online only. Wrong, wrong, and wrong again. We were just totally wrong. As soon as the pandemic ended, the young people said, no, 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 we don't want to be online. And we ended up holding these online things where one or two people would come. But what happened instead was that they started showing up on Sunday mornings. Some from that same group, and then other people, such as the people in the back right now. And some of those people started having babies. And so we found ourselves in this amazing situation where young adults were coming Sunday mornings, sticking around, hanging out with each other after the services, and this is still going on, and Roberta's ministry, which is supposed to be an online-only thing, has become an in-person-only thing. And lately, some of the people in what we now call the front porch have been saying, we want to hear more about spirituality in the Bible. So we're doing that too. We're just wrong about so many things. The other thing we were wrong about was attendance. Now, this isn't so obvious on Victoria Day weekend. But I asked Michael Larkin, to pull the statistics on attendance at this church on Sunday mornings, which we send to the United Church of Canada every year. And what it revealed is the average in October and November, because that's what they asked for, the average attendance in October and November at this church is 120 people. And it's usually between 60 to 90 people in person with the balance online. We did that in 2024 and 2023. It's too soon to know for 2025. Those numbers are the highest numbers we've seen since 2011. So we've actually been growing. So just, we got everything wrong. It's just amazing. We just got everything wrong. And I don't say this to embarrass anyone, because I was one of the people who got lots wrong, made all sorts of plans that didn't turn out that way. But our story today in Acts is about Peter being told by the angel to go do something impossible, something he considers kind of disgusting. Go hang out with those people who eat food that you hate. Go hang out with those people who are members of the Roman Empire who have invaded Palestine. Go hang out with them and share the good news. That must have seemed like the most ridiculous thing he had ever heard. But he said yes. And in our time, the most ridiculous thing a church can hear is that, you know what? You should believe in church. You should believe that people will still want to get together to hear the good news and talk about it and share it among themselves, share the love and compassion among themselves, and take it out into the world. At a time when churches are closing everywhere, we are bizarrely doing a radical thing just by staying open. And we're doing this because we still believe in it. Now, we have all sorts of theological differences. We do. You know, like, this is a mosaic congregation, not one color at all. And I totally respect that. But what people keep coming back for is this message that love matters and compassion matters, however you understand the origins of that. And it appears that as long as we keep talking about that and doing it and teaching it and exploring what it means, it appears that the angels will be standing by our sides and saying, keep going. Now, it may be that 10 years from now, the angels stand by our side and say, okay, church isn't what you should be doing anymore. You should do this thing. Who knows? I'm not going to predict because I've been wrong about pretty much everything. But if we agree to just follow God's lead, then it's going to be okay, whatever happens. Because when you walk with God, as Peter did with that angel to that strange pagan house, when you walk with God, you know that you are in safe hands. And God knows better than we do how to make this world turn out right. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Rooster Crows Podcast. We at Lawrence Park Community Church are a progressive church in North Toronto. If you'd like to learn more about the church and things that we do, check out our YouTube channel, which has recordings of entire services and sermons. And for any more details, go to our website at lawrenceparkchurch.ca. As we finish this week's podcast, we're going to hear our handbell choir perform All Things Bright and Beautiful. We hope you enjoy, and have a wonderful week.